call this meeting of the Cary Beach Council to order. I'd like to welcome everybody here, particularly the voting folks. Happy to.
Did you say voting?
You all will bow your heads, we'll have the invitation. God, we give thanks for this day, for the gifts of our lives, and the gifts of each other. We thank you for the ways in which you have become present in our lives. As we gather here at this meeting, we ask you to be with us, bless us in all decisions that we make, and help us be ever mindful of our motives and actions. And please remember our fellow Americans in Oklahoma City. Thank you. Now, y'all ready to pledge allegiance?
Thank you, Connie.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Now, we have a proclamation to present. And if you're who's going to, who am I presenting this to? If you'll step forward, I'll read it.
Oh, well.
Whereas having 700 people die each year in voting-related accidents in the United States, with approximately 70% of these being fatalities caused by drowning, and whereas the vast majority of these accidents are caused by human error or poor judgment and not by boat equipment or environmental factors, and whereas a significant number of boaters who lose their lives by drowning each year would be alive today if they had worn their life jackets, whereas today's life jackets are more comfortable, more attractive, more wearable than styles of years past and deserve a fresh look by today's voting public, and therefore let it be proclaimed that the Cary Beach Town Council supports the goals of North America's Safe Voting Campaign and proclaims May 19th to 25th, 2013 as National Safe Voting Week and started a year-round effort to promote safe voting and urges all those who vote to wear and practice safe voting habits. Thank you.
Thank you.
A lot of members here that are bridge members and past commanders. We have past commander Ron Kilmer, past commander Nina Neumeister, and the rest of the people are really active in what we do and we promote safe voting.
Yeah, I'll get your boats out and go around with each other and, you know.
And you've got the safe chip.
Oh, I see.
And
sure,
lots
sure.
And lots of clients.
Yeah.
They
vote.
Are kind of
sisters. They vote in their boats.
Thank you.
Thank you.
These are also
take
pots.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Now, at this time, we're going to call for a closed session. And this won't take but 15 to 20 minutes, so y'all bear with us. So, need a motion to go into closed session.
So moved.
Second.
Make a motion to return to open session.
Second.
All in favor, signal say aye. Okay. We concluded the legal matter and nothing's been resolved.
I have one change. Well, number six, approval of the 2013 Emergency Operations Plan. Can you add, with the exception of Annex C, the training requirements? Because New Hanover County has a change in theirs and I don't even change there. So what I'd like to do is, if council's okay, approve the operations plan with the exception of the training requirements, and we'll add that as soon as they give me their final.
Okay.
Number six.
Any other changes?
That was the only input from the department heads. Yes.
Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved with the change.
With the change.
Second.
All in favor, signal say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Adoption of the agenda. Chuck, you have a addition.
I'd like to add a report on the Shakespeare Disability Commission somewhere in here, just where we want to put it.
We'll put it under committees, since you're on the committee.
All right.
And two,
is that number four under committee?
Yes. And I would like to add under new business, setting up a meeting with Carolina Beach and Rice Beach for the marketing committee, something to do with that.
That's number two for new business?
Yes, number two.
I would like to add under old business, unless it could go under committees, the discussion about the place out here by the flagpole and the progress on that.
Number five?
Sure.
Flagpole. Okay. Any other changes or additions to the agenda?
I make a motion to accept the agenda with the changes.
Second.
All in favor? Signal say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. My name is Riley. Ms. Riley. Hello, Ms. Riley.
Hello, Mr. Lambert. Dean Lambert. How's everybody? I saw the Leda Fort Beach and Waterways meeting, and we talked about the insurance issue, and I'm giving some updates, and she invited me down, so I thank you for that. And anyway, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to apologize for not having a copy of it because my printer didn't work, it is true, but you could pull it up on here, or you could pull it up on your laptops if you want to look at it. You can go to the North Carolina General Assembly website and put in House Bill 519. If you can get it up there.
Well, I don't think that's sent to the internet, is it?
Is that to the internet?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Do you?
Okay, basically, if you remember the last time I was here, I had testified before the public hearings in regard to the modeling and transparency issues. And I just want to remind you a little bit about what's been going on and what's brought us to this point. As you know, that the rates keep going up on the coast consistently by anywhere between 15 and 30%. And this is a trend that's been going on for about 20 years. And when you look at the entire state, and you look at the entire state by territory, what you see is some areas getting very minor increases of 1 or 2%, and some areas actually getting decreases. So what happened about 4 years ago was that at the time, in 2008, when they implemented a huge increase on the coast and actually gave Charlotte a decrease, there was a lawsuit filed by Dare County. And Dare County and several of the other counties joined in. To make a long story short, it went all the way up to the North Carolina Supreme Court, but because of procedural issues, and I want to stress that, not substantive issues or on the merits, but procedural issues, the case was basically shot down. What that basically said was, look, as the statutes are written, and they took a very narrow interpretation of the statutes, they said only entities that are involved in the rate-making process have a right to appeal, have a right to a judicial review of a consent order. So they didn't even get to the point whether we were aggrieved parties or whether this was arbitrary and capricious and how fair it was, et cetera, et cetera. We were not part of this rate-making process. Therefore, we have no say. So then about a year or so later, a bill was passed in the General Assembly allowing the public to be involved in the rate-making process to a public comment, and this could either be by email, and this would be addressing you guys too, by email, fax, phone call, or actually go to Raleigh like several of us did and testify at the DOI hearing about these rates. So that's a good thing, because here's the question. If we ever want to challenge, if the property owners ever want to challenge this consent order, do we now have standing because we were part of the rate making process? So it's an interesting legal question, and one for the courts that we're not going to address right now, but I'm just kind of bringing up to speed. But that was pretty much what got done. Not much got done. The issue of modeling, which you've heard me deem year after year after year after year. Finally, we have a bill, House Bill 519, and it is addressing the issue of modeling. Why is this so important? Because the insurance companies use models as a cue on how and where much and where to raise the rates. This is their evidence, for lack of a better word. Well, the models show that, you know, that there's going to be a higher probability of more damage on the coast, therefore we have to raise the rates. I mean, it's much more complicated than that, but basically it's important because this is what they use. This is their tool. This is what they use when they go before the Commissioner of Insurance. They say, well, these models show this, and we have to raise the rates, and the cost of reinsurance is going up, et cetera, et cetera. Now, why models? Because models are projecting. They are forward-thinking. And it is standard industry practice to use modeling to project in the future what's going to happen. It's not backwards-looking. It's forwards-looking. So one of the things that's been argued over and over again, and Senator Brown and by a lot of other groups that are involved in this, is look at the actuarial data. Look at Charlotte, which got a decrease, but if you look at 82% of the claims that were paid were outside the 20 coastal county areas. Well, you know, that's past data, we don't look at it. So they didn't use this. There was a big hoopla in those interim hearings over this. So one of the things that was able to get in the bill, House Bill 519, was the fact that now they are required to use historical data and data that's from past histories. Not only that, let's look at the modeling issue. When I was first researching this, I called every state Department of Insurance and the Department of Insurance and the People's Advocates. We don't have a People's Advocate here in North Carolina. Do you know that all the other states have a people's advocate that advocates and sits into these hearings on behalf of the citizens of the state? But North Carolina doesn't have one. And the reason they don't have one is we are one of only 11 states that elect our insurance commissioners, 39 appoint. So North Carolina says, well, you know, you have the insurance commissioner and he's elected, you know, so he's representing you. Well, really? Well, that's a whole nother story. So one of the meetings that was held on the modeling, I found out that there's an AIR model, A-I-R, and the AIR model is highly prejudicial to the coast. In other words, when an insurance company uses the AIR model, it justifies them raising rates on the coast. However, if you use an RMS model, it shows more inland. So I started learning more and more about modelings, and when I called all these states, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, and South Carolina, all of them used what's called a combined model or a blended model. And this is a model that's most conducive to their individual coast, where we just use one blanket model, the AIR model. And my question was, why are we using just one model? Why are we using not only just one model, but the basic rubber stamp model? The model's not even combined with any other model. So our rates are going to continue to go up and up and up if these insurance companies continue using this. So we went back and forth with the actuary from the insurance company. Look at the bill. Now they have to require to use more than one model. They have to use at least two or three models. We're getting there. Right? It's moving. And a lot of people are involved with this. You know, there's NC20 has been very active and involved, and other entities, you know, around the coast are. So I'm just kind of giving you an update on what's been going on. This is very positive. So in that bill, we address the modeling issue, but also the transparency issue. Do you know in the state of Florida, they have something called a Florida Sunshine Law, where everything is public record, everything's transparent. The hearings on rate setting, it's all, you can watch it on TV. So this bill calls for more transparency as well. So the biggest fear with 519 is, we'll make it through the House. Well, there's also a Senate companion bill sponsored by Senator Harry Brown. He's a senator from Onslow County. He's been very verbal, very supportive, and he's the guy really leading the charge in Raleigh on all of this. He and Representative Paul Tyne. So Paul Tyne actually really worked the bill, House Bill 519, got that through. The Insurance Committee had passed. But this is what blew me away, guys and gals, is Tuesday, when that bill went for a vote of the entire House, do you know that bill passed unanimously? There wasn't one objection? That shocked me more than anything else.
It's been a long time.
So now, so then it passed the first reading in the Senate, and now it's been referred to the Senate Committee on Insurance. Well, guess who's on the Insurance Committee? You've got Harry Brown. Guess who sponsored the companion bill to the House bill? Harry Brown. And guess who's the Senate Majority Leader? Harry Brown. So I sound like a cheerleader for Harry Brown, which I kind of am. But right now, it's going to be up to the Senate. So there is a good chance, from what I hear in Raleigh, this thing passing. So we're going to finally get some relief. And a lot of people say, well, how's that going to affect our rates now? It's not. I mean, this rate increase has been implemented. It's going to happen. But what it will do is it will slow down, hopefully, or at least put some hurdles up for this type of thing happening again and again. And the one thing that didn't get in the bill that I really wanted in the bill, and I talked to Senator Brown about this, is do you know there are no time limits or constraints on when the Rate Bureau can ask for a rate increase? They can do it every year if they want. Their pattern is every 3 or 4 years, but there's nothing in the statutes specifying this. So I said to Brown, I said, so every year they could come back. I said, why don't we put something in there like every 4 years? Or something like that, or 5 years, where we're not getting hit constantly. So that didn't get in there, but that might be an interim study. In an interim study, the second thing is, I firmly believe, and I know you've heard this from me over and over again, we need a modeling commission. I think it's good that they're taking more than one model, and they're going to try to, you know, work with what's conducive to the coast. But a modeling commission consisting of objective climatologists, climatologists, scientists, and other actuaries from around the country, not just the state, similar to what Florida has. They have a commission on modeling to really come in and really scrutinize these models used. But this is a great first step, so maybe, you know, the commission will come down the road. So that's kind of where we are. I get a little excited about this issue.
I'm glad you do.
Well, you know, it's a boring issue, and if I wasn't animated, people would fall asleep, right? So, there you go. Any questions?
Well, just remind the people that Wayne sent out a scathing editorial and how much money he controls the day before the cutoff for that stuff. So.
Well, let me just say this. Certain people are looking real, real, real closely at electing versus appointing an insurance commissioner. That might be coming down the pike too, that we may possibly consider an appointment rather than an election. Because if you look at the insurance commissioner, I mean, Wayne Goodwin had the background, but anybody could run without any knowledge.
Well, he was the hand-picked predecessor.
Well, we know that. We know how much you like Wayne, and we know you follow his blog, and we know he's your buddy.
Yeah.
How is the advocate selected in other states? Is that elected, appointed, or?
Yes, he's appointed. Well, for instance, Florida, Robin Westcott is appointed by the Commissioner of Insurance.
Okay, so the commissioner is elected.
No.
He's appointed, and right. Then he appoints an advocate.
That's correct. That's correct. And
that doesn't sound like they appealing to me.
Well, but. Well, you've got 30, the 11 states that elect, and 39 that appoint. Out of the 39 that appoint, even though it's the Department of Insurance, several of those states, the department that they fall under is Consumer Protection.
Okay. That sounds better. I think we should have an advocate for having the appointee appoint one. Just didn't sound right.
It doesn't sound right, but people that, you know, Elliot is his name in South Carolina, and that's under consumer protection. And, you know, I'm not sure about Elliot's position. I think it's important because they actually, the funds go back and forth between the departments, and it's somewhat funded by the Department of Insurance, so they really do act as independent, under the independent departments. And, you know, it depends on how you structure it. You're right, it sounds a little too close for comfort, fox guarding a hen house.
Yeah.
It's a southern thing, right?
Now, this plane called for a public hearing in June, like several months ago.
It was a public hearing on the proposed rate increases. That was last fall.
Yes, and we went to it and revoked, but I thought he came back down like in February or January and said he would have another one in June.
Well, that was a hearing. That was a regular hearing that the public was invited, but it was not a public hearing in that the public was not allowed to speak. So the hearing was going to be in May, and that hearing was going to be where the North Carolina, where the Rate Bureau would go in and make their case justifying the rate increases. The public's invited to attend, and you could sit in the audience, and you could watch, which I did one, and let me tell you, I was there for 2 days, and that was enough. The public would be there, but wasn't allowed to speak. The only time the public was allowed to speak was at the public hearing in the fall. And he took 8,000 responses or something. Mm-hmm. And he said he took all of it in consideration. Well, look what happened, you know. And he says, well, you know, it's more evenly distributed in that other parts of the state got, you know, bigger increases this time than they did 4 years ago. You know, I mean, it's all, who knows. But I think you're going to see some changes. I think it's going to be slow. It's something we need to remain vigilant on. Curry Beach has been great. I mean, you guys are great. You guys are really active. You're involved. And let me tell you, they like hearing from elected officials in Raleigh. You know, go up there. It's a little bit preaching to the choir, but it keeps it in the forefront. So you guys have done a good job with it. We just have to stay vigilant and keep going and going and going.
I'm not sure our residents know that the five counties here have the highest rate increase.
Oh yeah, Southeast North Carolina consistently.
Other coastal
more than the Outer Banks. We consistently get higher rates. It's either the same as the Outer Banks or more than the Outer Banks. This time it was more than the Outer Banks, and I asked Wayne Goodwin. There was a meeting in New Bern, and I said, why the Northern Coast getting more than the Southern Coast? Oh, I don't know. You're going to have to ask the governor's office that provided data. So, that's where we are.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the
have a great
fight.
Meeting. Oh, you're welcome.
Cop that.
Paperwork that's been written up and
by Leighton Bledsoe, the Sandman for the county, that's been presented to the county commissioners along with Carolina Beach to get reauthorized, and also at the national level with our elected representatives helping us to do that. But the last couple of meetings have expanded that once we were able to get the funding issue straightened out between Carolina Beach and their renourishment project and ours. As you're well aware, one of the glitches between our project and Carolina Beach is that part of our project is in Carolina Beach. When the maps were originally drawn up, there was communities that were in between Carolina and Kira Beach. And they have since been absorbed into both towns, but the renourishment portion has stayed the same. So if and when we can get new maps made up, the plan is that Carolina Beach is going to be a whole unit and Kira Beach will be a whole unit. The Kira Beach project has been done successfully to the Corps standards. I can only speak for what the Corps said. Carolina Beach was given an extension on theirs because of the slowness in doing the Kira Beach project, because there was supposed to be two hopper dredges and there was only one. So our project didn't get completed because of the contract issues. And so Carolina Beach was given an extension, and that's completed. Riceville Beach is still on track for theirs. And Marlowe & Company, which is the lobbying organization, is keeping their ear to the ground on all the issues regarding both renourishment and the inlets. I really don't have anything to say particularly about the inlet project, because there isn't anything really that involves us as a town, either politically or financially at this time. It happened once before financially, and it may happen again, but right now there isn't anything going on.
So Arlen, did we ever spend that money? We didn't, right?
The 15,000,
yeah.
We did.
It didn't, okay.
But they're holding it, right? They didn't spend it on the project.
No, I thought they did, but
maybe.
Okay.
Because I was under the impression they received more money and they didn't need what we were donating, and that so they were holding our donation.
15,000 for the inlet dredging.
Yeah.
Not
yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Is that what you're talking about?
Well, Jim, the language for Carolina Beach's extension, or is it been received, or is it going to move forward? Or is,
15 years.
15?
What?
And
they're only making for 15 years.
Well, let's questions to have us go into.
Yeah.
Here's the, hopefully, the future plan. There's a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. Plan A is basically what we've got now. Corps of Engineer project, separate projects, and staging and everything like we have now. Plan B would be that if the county could get controlling authority, and the Corps still supervise the project. That would allow us, if we got controlling authority, that would allow us to throw out three separate renourishment dates and have one super renourishment project. At the very minimum, we would eliminate two staging costs for equipment, because there may be an additional staging cost, the difference between here and Riceville, but nowhere near what the combined staging cost is for equipment for three separate projects. So that's plan B. Example of that, putting our numbers now, would be roughly about $6 million federal, and $4 million would be divided up among the entities in the county. And then the last one would be a local dollar project. that basically each project would be under the control of each municipality. That, well, it can't, it really, there's really no way that I can see right now that the Cherry Beach, being the size that it is, could be able to absorb anything like that. But the upside is that every time that we're talking at Port Beach and Waterway, we're talking about what the cost is to the community or the cost is to the town. It's always in terms of ROT. So it's not like, let's dig our hands into people's pockets a little bit deeper. It's always in terms of the fund that we already have on hand with the addition of ongoing ROT. There has been some little discussion, not a whole lot yet, but there's been some discussion about going back and seeing if we can redo the percentages for ROT as far as what's for advertising and what's for other functions. Because when that was divided up, there wasn't the problem with sand that there is now. So But that's down the road. There hasn't been any meetings that I've been aware of regarding that.
That's coming.
Can you comment on hiring the engineer to do the surveys and where that money is going to come from?
ROT. Port Beach and Waterway, the one action that was taken at the last meeting was to request an RFP for annual shoreline transects. We have been doing that for probably 4 to 6 years. John has been going out and making measurements a couple times a year. When he first started doing it, he was making his own measurements. Then he met with the Corps and he found out that the numbers that he was coming up with weren't of great use to the Corps because they were apples and oranges. He's been, since then, he's been using their types of measurements. None of the other communities have been doing it, and it's required in the contract. So what we hope will happen is the RFP will go out to develop somebody who can do that, an engineer who can do that. Then, when the RFP is accepted, then we'll be coming back to all the communities to talk about how you're going to pay for that. And again, that is hoped to be able to come out of room occupancy tax.
Why should we hire an engineer rather than letting John continue what he's doing?
I would agree, especially if it coming up with the same numbers and doing the same work. And to the best of my knowledge, the Corps has been happy with John's work for the last couple of years with the numbers. Because in my discussions with him, they look at his figures. And one of the reasons for doing this is so that we can get a better picture of what's going on the beach other than every renourishment year. So that we can look at and know that, well, gee, we lost this much beach, but it was because of this named storm. Or we gained beach because of this direction of the wind. And so we get a better picture of what's actually going on in the beach.
What if we elect not to participate in the engineering survey panel?
What was that?
What if we elect not to participate with hiring an engineer since we're doing it ourselves?
That's always an option. This is the organization's a volunteer organization. I don't know what hand slapping could go on down the road, but back to what Emily was saying is, if John's doing the same work, then the same product is going in to the county, the same numbers and everything.
Right.
So,
no, he doesn't have engineers stuck on the end of it.
Well, yeah, there won't be an engineer stamp on them.
Yeah.
But that's something that you're going to have to discuss when that comes up.
Yeah. Wanting to say, man, has he been down here lately to see how much we lost?
He came down about a month and a half ago. It was his last time that he's been there.
Well, has Carolina Beach started anything yet?
Yes.
Yes, it started.
So they're moving it as quickly as you can?
Yeah, pretty soon.
Okay. So maybe they're saying, oh, down there.
Well, that's the direction.
Exactly.
That's why, if we're throwing anything out there, or growing or something, they think twice about where to throw it. Because it could stop the flow from coming from Carolina Beach.
Any questions?
Anybody have anything else?
Yes, sir.
Sandman, Layton, said that he'd be more than happy to address the council anytime that they felt that they would like to hear. I would also probably recommend that with the new federal insurance program, maybe we may want to talk to have Spencer Rogers address it.
I think he'd be very good to talk to us.
That'll turn whoever doesn't have all white hair will have when he gets back.
Yes. When you see some of his figures, he'll start looking for land in the mountains.
Yeah, and not in mountains of this state, in Rhode Island. All right, anything else to thank you very much for your time.
John, you're up. Franchise me.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the board, Town of Curry Beach. I'm John Elliott. I am the director of Duke Energy's East Region, located here in Wilmington, and also a Curry Beach resident. I appreciate the time on the agenda today to discuss a franchise agreement with the Town of Curry Beach that is up for renewal. The last agreement was signed in 1953 by Mayor Taffy Russ for the Town of Curry Beach, and the franchise agreement that is currently in place is very similar to the one we're looking at today. It's very similar to the one in 1953. It's basically the town provides Duke Energy Progress the ability to come in, build, construct facilities in town to serve residents and businesses here in Curry Beach. It allows us in Section 2 to come in and maintain and repair such said facilities should they be damaged or need to be repaired. And then the last section is just to hold harmless. So if anyone gets in our facilities or there's any damage caused by our facilities, the town is not held liable for those. Those facilities come back to Duke Energy Progress. I know this document has been provided. I believe I'm correct that the town attorney has had an opportunity to review this. This is a franchise agreement that takes place under state statute. Every municipality that Duke Energy Progress serves in North Carolina has such agreement in place that allows the work to take place necessary to make sure we're providing safe and reliable electricity to the municipalities that we serve. So I do not want to belabor that, but I'd much rather answer your questions. I will say one last piece of the franchise agreement. It really comes into play when Duke Energy Progress is in town rights of way, doing work or have facilities in town rights of way. They do not come into play when we have private easement on private property that comes into play. Those are certainly are things that come back into play with the city rights of way where we have a facility in question. So I will stop there and ask if there are questions or any comments.
Does anyone have any questions for John?
I just have one. It's not really a big question. I'm in favor of the agreement. In Section 2, it says all poles shall be substantial and symmetrical. And I'm not looking for your answer today, but when you guys go down 429, if you look, there's a number of poles leaning. If you live in Curie, you know what I'm talking about. Symmetrical, I don't know if there's an angular measurement of that. It's happened over a number of years, so it's not like it. You inherited it, right? Progress Energy gets it, right? But is there some plan to straighten those eventually, or we're going to wait until one snaps, or the storm
gets tomorrow? No, we're never going to wait until one snaps. Right. That is not an interest of anyone, because liability is a key component of that.
Yep.
And we have a firm that goes out and test poles on a regular basis and has that done. But I can certainly check in there with the operations center and have that. But no, there will never be a situation where we allow a pole to get in such damage that's going to snap other than a storm. So.
That was a little sarcastic.
No, absolutely.
But I guess the question, is there an angular measure that you guys use in your checking, or as long as it's safe, which you do core samples, it's safe, right?
Yes, and we do both.
Okay.
Yes, we do.
I don't have any questions.
Thank you.
Sure.
Jeff?
Emily?
Thanks, John.
I make a motion that we approve the request.
Right. We have to wait till next time.
No, sir. The ordinance requires that there be a vote at each, it requires two separate readings and votes for effect. So I will need, at the pleasure of the board, a vote this evening.
Dave? I make a motion that we approve as presented.
Correct.
There you go.
Second. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
And Mr. Mayor, while I have the podium, if I could please ask the town clerk that Duke Energy Progress be placed on next month's agenda for the second and subsequent meeting of the franchise, please. Thank you so much.
See you next month.
Thank you.
Discussion and consideration of committee figures.
I'm sorry, I didn't have a chance to check the list. Was there anybody else who signed up before the committee?
Oh. What do you want to?
Is this about the committee business?
Yeah, committee business. I actually wanted to do an update on what happened at Boogie in the Park, and then we can also talk about committee business, or should I wait till then?
Yeah, Eric, was yours about?
The first one.
Is yours about committee business?
No, not really.
Okay. I apologize.
Yes and no. Two things I saw on the agenda. One was the thing on the, and that does do with Boogie in the Park, using the funds from the commemorative sales for Boogie in the Park. When this was first dreamed up in the original committee, the idea was the commemorative sales would go to help pay out down to debt on the park. And I know money's very fungible item, and you know, you put it in the right pocket, left pocket, there's dollars. I just know that some people are very upset that they're going to hear about spending money for their, but they thought they were paying off debt and it's now being used for entertainment for visitors. The other question I had statement was concerning using food vendors on trucks. And these food vendors do not pay property taxes and jury fees, and do not have to buy restrooms and monitoring facilities and all. And I would hope we would approach our own restaurant owners and food people we have producing food in jury fees and give them a first shot before we hire some outsider to sell the food in front of people who have a substantial investment, pay high property taxes for their property, and employ people here, some on the beach. I just don't think that's a fair thing to do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Are you going to address the comment about the Bluefish fundraiser? Because it was stated that it's for activities at the park and for debt repayment is how it's
been advertised.
Been advertised.
It is now, yes.
No, it's been from the beginning.
Right.
Well, I'm going back when the Hoosier Park Committee was in existence. Oh, okay. It was, we talked about having sponsorships to help pay for the park.
Okay.
Jim was there.
Good
people. Okay. And but I think most people were understanding was they helped pay for the park.
Okay.
And I just, it's right by that.
Step up to the podium. Committee business, Parks and Rec. Congratulations. We're trying to make this the longest one ever, but let's try
to find it. Okay. I'm Greg Lozinski, 509 North Fort Fisher Boulevard, member of the Parks and Rec Committee. So, ladies and gentlemen of the town council, I wanted to come up here and tell you, give you a little bit of an update on Boogie in the Park. We started Boogie in the Park a few months ago, and with work, a lot of incredible work by one lady, yay, Joan Van Ham. Thank you very much, Joan. And by an incredible amount of work by Nancy and her staff. We had what I think was a very successful event. Some of you had the opportunity to attend, some of you may not have had the opportunity to attend. But even though the signs went up only 3 days prior to the event, we did get on 90 websites, We did get some airtime on Channel 6 for weekend. Murray Beach had a quarter screen on the two previous weekends. And so that work was done by Nancy and her staff, so that was quite helpful. We still have one sign to get up, but I'm sure we'll get that done. Well, we started the event at 4 o'clock, and we had approximately maybe 25 folks. That doesn't sound like a lot of success. But I would tell you, by 4:30, I did a head count. At 4:30, we were at 142, and it grew from there. Now, not only was it about 142, but it's probably somewhere between 170 and 200. We had people dancing in the park. We had children dancing, little girls dancing. We had big girls and seniors dancing. We even had a veteran in a wheelchair dancing. I think there was a lot of fun had by all. I know Nancy was there. I felt pretty proud of Curry Beach on Sunday. Walked around the crowd a little bit, asked people what they thought. One of the ladies from Carolina Beach, who was sitting there, said, "Curry Beach is now the place to be on Sunday afternoon." I thought that was a great thing to say. Now, some of the other feedback we did get, or one of the other feedbacks that I did get, was that people were saying, you know, it's kind of over dinner hour, you know, kind of hungry, maybe we should remove the time. I think the time is actually excellent, and we just need to determine how could we potentially meet that need, or how do we want to direct people who have that particular need to be fed. I think overall this was a success. I'm looking forward to many more of these things through the summer. And thanks to Nancy and the staff for their continued support. And I think it went off pretty well without a hitch. So I don't know if, Joan, did you want to say anything? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to elaborate on the time for this week?
The time for this week is 4 to 7 again. And it's Steady Eddie's, I think. This week.
And it'll be 4 to 7 every, yeah. Every Sunday.
So, I think that's turned out to be a good time. Sun's coming down. A lot of people were sitting out there on their chairs. I think we had a lot of locals as well as a lot of people who came up from the beach once they heard the music.
Do you want to bring food with you to, if you want to bring your dinner with you?
Well, if you're aware of the of the concert, I think you can bring. I brought some food. I know Joan and some of the others brought some food, but there are a lot of people that came up from the beach, people who are on the pier, people who are visiting.
But we don't have a restriction on no coolers or no picnic basket.
No, the restriction we have right now is really on alcohol. We did not have any restriction on coolers.
I do have one question, because yes. I was just coming back in town and we drove up to see the ocean, and a few little kids kind of darted in front of us, and you know, and then I heard the music. Is there any way of at least a small portion, that first block, can be blocked off? Because I did not feel comfortable at all driving through there with kids and parents walking and running back and forth.
I think that's a fair suggestion. I think that would potentially impact some of the suppliers down there. I don't know. I think that would probably be a council decision. We certainly can do it if it's needed.
I was going to speak to the same thing. I drove through at 6:30 because I came back into town.
Yeah.
And I went through it. And you have a third of the people are on the right beach side. And yeah. Another nice, fairly crowded. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people right up close to you on the left side. And like you, I was very nervous driving through there, knowing any minute the kids could be pulled back and forth. I would really suggest to close it off the concert.
That would give people more space to sit.
Once you're watching the show, your mother and you're watching, trying to watch the show, you've got a 3 or 4 year old, you've got to watch them. So, I mean, really, you need to make that a family, you're making it a family thing. So, no alcohol. And I think that it's a good time to close that off and make it a nice family and lovely room.
This makes sense to us. Okay. I mean, that sounds great to me if the town supports that.
So I agree with you on the alcohol. I agree with closing off the road.
Okay.
So one, people are going to, you have to close off at the beginning of the morning because there's going to be cars parked there all day. They got to back out. And two, when we did this with the park, we already caused enough problems. We said we weren't going to close that road.
Close the road.
Okay, every Sunday in the summer? So every Sunday in the summer, you're going to close off that road?
And it doesn't have to be the whole road, just up to the first street.
Mr. Hagel's got a great point about
yeah,
you got to close it off early because if I get down there at
right.
8 o'clock in the morning and go fishing or something and park, and today I'm having a great day on the beach fishing, kids come, mom joins us, and now I'm parked where you're getting ready to close it, and at 4:30 in the middle of the concert, I'm not a music guy, I want to back out and go on, is there a problem?
I think the appropriate thing to do would have a policeman down there. Instead of riding through all the time, just have one down there walking back and forth, making sure everything's okay and the kids are under control.
It would impact the restaurants and all the bars and things. I mean, it sounds like a good idea, but then it's going to cause a lot of logistical problems.
I think even if we're bringing potential customers for the restaurants, I think they would probably have an issue with that.
You could put speed bumps to slow people down, but and children or whatever, but people
you don't have to go fast.
Well, they right. see you when you pull up there, you see these people. You
go no, I agree with that.
Certainly, somebody went through there, should be a restaurant, they went through that.
You have two questions on here. It looks like you were going to talk about maybe our citizen dissuaded you, but about food trucks and beer and wine vendors.
Well, I'm happy to talk about food. I think we discussed alcohol, and at least for the moment, we probably are not going to do anything to take alcohol to the council. I don't think there's a lot of necessarily tremendous support for having alcohol sold.
Right. No. Right. Well, I can't speak for my fellow commissioners, but I'm not in favor of it at all.
So that's fine.
For both parks?
Sorry?
For both parks?
Both parks.
Because I know it's been talked about at Jolene's too.
We've allowed it as special events up there, but when we talked about it for the oceanfront one, the last time we talked about it, it seemed to be no really. That was my input to everyone else, right?
Okay, so let's talk about food.
There you go.
If we can talk about food. I respect the opinion that our restaurants offer, they pay their taxes.